Chapter 7. "Get down to Greenwich Village and bring back Dr. Crewson," Isaac Bell ordered an apprentice when he rushed into Van Dorn's Knickerbocker office early the next morning. "You are authorized to take a taxi both ways. On the jump." Dr. Daniel Crewson was a handwriting expert. The apprentice raced off. Bell read his telegrams. The laboratory in Washington confirmed that the ink on Arthur Langner's note was the same ink in Langner's pen. He was not surprised. A wire from Pennsylvania demonstrated the shortcomings of John Scully's lone wolf approach to detecting. The operatives who Joe Van Dorn had assigned to assist Scully while Bell investigated the Arthur Langner death had sent, "Can't find Scully. Stop. Still looking. Stop. Return care of Western Union, Scranton, and Philadelphia." Bell growled a mild oath under his breath. They had split up to increase their chances of finding Scully. If they didn't find him by noon, it would fall to him to inform the boss that the detectives assigned to help Scully track the Fry Boys were instead tracking Scully. Bell called for the research operative he had brought into the case. Grady Forer was a grizzly bear of man with an immense chest and belly. He looked like a fellow you would want on your side in a barroom brawl. But his greatest strengths were a ferocious determination to track down the minutest details and a prodigious memory. "Have you found out where home was for these hydrophobic skunks?" Bell asked. "Where did they grow up?" The research man shook his head. "I've been beating my brains out, Isaac. Can't find any set of three Fry brothers anywhere in New Jersey. Tried cousins. No go." Bell said, "I have an idea about that. What if they changed their name at the time of their first unauthorized withdrawal? That original robbery was in the middle of the state, if I recall. East Brunswick Farmers Mutual Savings. Hicktown Bank, about halfway to Princeton. We always ascribed their gunning down the teller and the customer to viciousness. But what if those three were stupid enough to rob the nearest bank to home?" Grady Forer stood up straighter. "What if they murdered witnesses because they were recognized, even while wearing masks? Maybe the witnesses knew them as local boys. Little Johnny down the road grew up and got a gun. Remember their first note in blood? Fear the Fry Boys." "So maybe they weren't so stupid after all," marveled the research man. "From then on, everyone called them the Fry Boys. Just like they wanted us to. Find a family near that East Brunswick bank with three brothers or cousins who suddenly disappeared. Even two brothers and a next-door neighbor." Bell wired the operative sent to help Scully, and Scully himself, instructing them to head for East Brunswick. "Merci, Mademoiselle Duval. And who else has been steering my thoughts?" Which brought him straight back to his photograph of Arthur Langner's suicide note. He laid it next to the snapshot he had taken yesterday morning of one of Langner's handwritten patent applications. He pored over them with a magnifying glass, searching for inconsistencies that might suggest forgery. He could see none. But he was not an expert, which was why he had summoned the handwriting expert from Greenwich Village. Dr. Daniel Crewson preferred the high-sounding title graphologist. His white beard and bushy eyebrows fit a man who spouted lofty theories about the European talking cure doctors, Freud and Jung. He was also prone to statements like, "The complex robs the ego of light and nourishment," which was why Bell avoided him when he could. But Crewson possessed a fine eye for forgery, so fine that Bell suspected that Dr. Graphology made ends meet by cobbling up the occasional bank check. Crewson inspected the photograph of the suicide note with a magnifying glass, then screwed a jeweler's loop into his eye and repeated the process. At last, he sat back in his chair, shaking his head. Bell asked, "Do you see inconsistencies in that handwriting that might suggest it was penned by a forger?" Crewson said, "You are a detective, sir." "You know I am," Bell said curtly to head off a windy discourse. You are familiar with the work of Sir William Herschel? Fingerprint identification. But Sir William also believed that handwriting exposes character. I am less interested in character than forgery. Crewson did not hear. From this mere sample, I can tell that the man who wrote this note was eccentric, highly artistic, and very dramatic, too, given to the grand gesture, deeply sensitive, with powerful feelings that could be overwhelming. In other words, Bell interrupted, bleakly conceding he would have to report the worst to Dorothy Langner, the emotional sort likely to commit suicide. So tragic to take his own life so young. Langner wasn't young. Given time, with psychological analysis, he could have investigated the sources of his sorrow and learned to control his self-destructive impulses. Langner was not young, Bell repeated. He was very young. He was 60 years old. Impossible. Look at this hand. See the bold and easy flow. An older man's writing cramps. The letters get smaller and trail off as the hands stiffen with age. This is beyond any doubt the handwriting of a man in his 20s. 20s? Echoed Bell, suddenly electrified. No older than 30, I guarantee you. Bell had a photographic memory. Instantly, he returned in his mind's eye to Arthur Langner's office. He saw the bookshelves lined with bound volumes of Langner's patent applications. He had had to open several to find a sample for his camera. Those filed before 1885 were handwritten. The more recent were typed. Arthur Langner played the piano. His fingers would have been more supple than those of the average man his age. Crewson shrugged. I am neither musician nor physiologist. But if his fingers were not more supple, then this could be a forgery. Crewson huffed. Surely you didn't summon me here to analyze the personality of a forger. The more skillful the forgery, the less it would tell me about his personality. I did not summon you here to analyze his personality, but to confirm whether this is a forgery. Now you are telling me that the forger made a mistake. He copied Langner's hand from an early sample of his handwriting. Thank you, Dr. Crewson. You've opened a new possibility in this case. Unless his piano playing made his handwriting like that of a young man, this is a forgery. And Arthur Langner was murdered. A Van Dorn secretary burst in, waving a sheet of yellow paper. Scully! The telegram from loner John Scully that he thrust into Isaac Bell's hand was typically terse. Got you wire. Had same thought. So-called fries surrounded west of East Brunswick. Local constabulary, their cousins. Care to lend a hand? Surrounded? Asked Bell. Did Mike and Eddie catch up with him? No, sir. All by himself, like usual. It looked like Scully had found the Fry's real names and trailed them home, only to discover that the bank robbers were related to a crooked sheriff who would help them escape. In which case, even the formidable Scully had bit off more than he could chew. Bell scanned the rest of the telegram for directions. Willard Farm, Cranberry Turnpike, 10 miles west of Stone Church. Left turn off flagged. Milk truck 1 mile. Middle of nowhere in the Jersey farm country. It would take all day to get there connecting to local trains. Telephone the Weehawken garage for my auto. Bell grabbed a heavy golf bag and raced down the Knickerbocker stairs and out to Broadway. He jumped into a taxi and ordered the driver to take him to the pier at the foot of 42nd Street. There he boarded the Weehawken ferry to New Jersey, where he had parked his red locomobile.